Hey, colleagues, welcome back to the office. It's Steve. Welcome to our podcast for today. This is K2's CPA Firm Technology Strategies Part 1. We're actually off today, but this is a course that I recorded at a recent conference that we did for a state society earlier this month. And this is part of our longstanding technology conference series through K2, where we bring state society members and other practitioners the latest and greatest technology news facing the accounting profession in an action-packed two-day conference. So this is our class, CPA Firm Technology, and really kind of it's intended to focus on some of the major aspects that are facing public accounting in the coming year. In today's course, in part one, we're going to be looking at upcoming technology industry trends that are facing professional accountants. If you're in a public accounting position, whether you're in a small practice, a big practice, or somewhere in between, there are trends that you should be familiar with. Some of these trends are technology-based, based off of changes in the way that people are conducting business. For example, blockchain. What is it? How does it function? And how is it going to affect the professional accounting? And some of them could be procedural and firm-based in terms of how do we recruit new clients and what does it look like to grow our business. We're going to take a look at a variety of upcoming technology trends that face the profession and how you can prepare yourself and prepare your firm for it. We're going to talk about what it looks like to build a strategic roadmap for improving firm operations, including recruiting new clients. Every organization needs to consistently recruit new business, bring new clients to the firm. Public accounting is no different. In a lot of practices, for example, we have a lifespan of a client and a lifespan of a business. If we're not actively going out and trying to recruit new business, younger business, we're going to find ourselves in a position where some of our clients will age out and we need to find a way to recruit and continue the growth. We'll also talk about some of the new technology that's out there. Specifically, I'm going to talk about the .cpa top-level domain provided by the AICPA. So a top-level domain, .com, .net, .org, and others, these top-level domains are how people can find us on the internet. And now we have our own for the accounting profession. How cool is that? So the .cpa domain is a new domain provided by the AICPA, and we'll talk about what it is and how you can get it for your practice. And throughout today's presentation, I'll pepper in as many different technology recommendations, solutions, apps, and programs that I think are of interest to public accountants. Now, I do want to remind you, if you are a financial professional, and I hope you are, because today's class is solely focused on the needs of CPA firms, you can earn a CPE credit for watching or listening to today's podcast. It's super simple. Whether you're watching live or whether you're watching on your own time using, for example, our podcasts on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and others, or watching on YouTube or Facebook, after watching or listening, head on over to CPEtoday.com and go ahead and use course code CFT1. Again, that is CPEtoday.com. Use course code CFT1. Takes 2 minutes. You'll take a quick quiz about what you listened to or watched in today's podcast, and you will earn a credit for today's class. It's super simple, it's fast, it's affordable, and it's a great way to stay on top of your continuing education because we all know those credits just sneak up on you. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Steve of old for today's class, and I'll see you back at the end for our review questions. Thanks and enjoy. Go ahead and get into it for our first section for today, and we are going to be looking at current technology trends. This is going to be the stuff that we feel as a K2 instructor group that for public accountants that you should be on the lookout for. Some of this is going to be technology. Some of it's going to be opportunity-based and revenue-based. There's lots of different things that we can do to make our firms more effective. And let's talk about many of those here today. So some general market observations that I have seen. I will tell you that software really kind of falls into major purchasing categories and then also cycles. 2021, we are, in my opinion, ending an era in a lot of ways. And I feel like 2022, just around the corner, we're going to be entering into a new generation of software. If we think about modern technology techniques such as machine learning, deep learning, natural language processing, optical character recognition, and scanning. I mean, a lot of these technologies that have been emerging for the last couple of years that you've heard Randy and Tommy and myself talk about, well, guess what? They're going to really start to make their way into many of the applications that we're looking at. So I tell you, this is a good time to be considering and reviewing how you implement and utilize technology inside of your organization. And I expect over the next couple of years, we're going to see a major cycle. And I think a lot of you will probably be reconsidering some of the different tools that you've been using up to this point. So a majority of the revenue for a lot of firms really is in the tax and audit and compliance side of this. Okay. Now, I think this is a risk myself. I mean, if I look at, for example, the capabilities of a Intuit TurboTax, yes, I understand that for 99% of people, that's going to be good. We tend to focus on that 1%, you know, the complicated stuff like the 1031 exchanges or the small businesses. But more and more of these accounting and bookkeeping tools that have been consumer are kind of moving up into that prosumer market. And as such, I think a lot of this is going to become a lot standardized and a lot easier and a lot more streamlined. Now, that's a good thing unless you bill your revenue based off of billable hours. And if your revenue is tied to the number of hours you work, you know, you're probably going to want to start thinking about other opportunities to improve your practice. We'll talk more about kind of tax planning and assurance and advisory services throughout this presentation. There are a lot of opportunities abound that we can consider, whether they be in advisory, client accounting as a service. But I will say, unfortunately, and maybe the brown shoes approach of accounting, of, you know, kind of being late to the party might still stick with a lot of you. Unfortunately, kind of these changes with respect of kind of moving from the compliance side of this, the tax return and the bookkeeping side of this, more into the advisory side of this might be a culture shock. But I will tell you, for firms that are willing to embrace these changes, they are going to reap the benefits in the next decade. It's not necessarily about price, it's about quality, and it's about the completion of the package that we offer. And I really feel that accounting is more moving into a business advisory than it is in compliance. And I really think that's where our future is. You know, that tech that we talked about, the machine learning, the bank feeds, that's kind of stuff. It's really automating a lot of the things that we've traditionally done and made money from. So we've got to find new opportunities for our organizations. Technology is getting more complex, but at the same time, it is getting easier to use. And I know that sounds counterintuitive. Trust me, it sounds weird when I say that, but it's true. I mean, if we look at what these applications can do, as a developer, as a guy who writes software for a living and builds software for companies, what we can do now is absolutely incredible. And it is complex at a very, very deep level. We can solve really complicated, difficult, hard questions for organizations with software now. And surprisingly and counterintuitively, it's actually easier for them overall. You know, if we look at, for example, the, you know, mobile operating systems, whether it be Android and iOS, it's incredible with what we can do just on a mobile phone. And it's very complex, but also at the same time, it's very simple. You know, if we think about hailing an Uber or ordering a pizza, you know, from Domino's on our phone and it just shows up, you know, whether it be to take us somewhere or to deliver something to us, think about the supply chains and the logistics networks and all that stuff that is very complex, but at the same time, it feels auto magic, which is incredible. We're seeing remote work increasing. I'm going to tell you to run towards this. I really feel that remote work is the way of the future. It's been the way of the future, but if anything, that COVID has shown us that this is successful and we can be useful with this. And we could do a lot of really cool stuff with remote work, and we can hire people that might not normally be a good fit for our organizations. And we can share files, we can communicate, we can collaborate, we can be productive without all of the overhead that we would normally come with running an office. You know, you think about rent, you think about common use business machines like photocopiers and such. You know, we think about all the commuting and the footprint with respect to what it takes to run an office. And then all of that went away last year. You know, everything went away. We all had to go home. And yet, almost every practitioner I've talked to has been more successful in 2020 than they were in the preceding years. why not keep it up? I mean, if you think about it, I mean, if you eliminate a lot of the costs of the office, where does that go? Go straight to the bottom line, you know, and you're going to be happier. Your staff is going to be happier. You're going to find yourself being more productive. And if you do need an office, great. Maybe you don't need as much space, or maybe you give your people flexible work options, or maybe, for example, that you, you give people, some common, a couple sets of, office spaces to work from, and then they rotate when they actually need to come. But generally, I think people are happier when they work remote, especially if they have a dedicated work environment. For those of you here with us today, I'd love to know, in the COVID year, the year that didn't exist for many of us, how did you feel? You know, if you worked remotely before, you know, did you see any impact when you saw your colleagues move remote? And if you were always an office worker, I'd love to know what it was like for that transition moving home. And was it successful for you? And if it was successful, what do you think was successful about it? And if it wasn't successful, what would you do differently now? We're seeing competition a lot more, you know, especially from firms that are not in our area. And unfortunately, loyalty is hard to come by these days. With respect to competition, you know, you could have a firm in California competing with a firm in Texas, competing against a firm in Florida. I mean, location doesn't matter. I could tell you, for my business, we have clients worldwide. We've engaged with people in Europe. We've engaged with people in Asia, all across the United States. I've had a client in Canada, a couple clients in Canada, since I started business, you know, and the fact that we can work anywhere is fantastic. But it also means our competition can too. And, you know, we still have to continue to derive and deliver value to our clients so they want to keep working with us. So it's a double-edged sword. It's nice in the sense that I don't really have to worry about my client being in that same area, but I also didn't need to worry about that competitor 2-3 states over. We are seeing increase in costs. Costs are going up. However, I will say that for those particular costs, especially for organizations that have gotten rid of the office, we are seeing those costs go up differently in different areas. Rent might be going down, but we're, for example, seeing increase in technology costs. And a lot of these are in subscriptions. You know, if you think about a lot of the software your organization is probably using, I'm willing to bet a lot of it is subscription-based. You know, your tax and accounting applications certainly are subscription-based. You got Office 365, Microsoft 365. You got all these different services that are out there. And they're almost all subscription-based these days. And, you know, we're essentially having to pay for these things month in, month out. Again, it's not the worst thing in the world. I will tell you, for a guy who makes subscription-based software, the idea behind this is that, you know, there's the part of the software you're paying for that would normally be that acquisition cost. But then, you know, we're delivering all these other valuable things that go along with it. You know, for example, it could be backup, it could be hosting, it could be updates, service, support, all these other common components, which are costs that we would have probably incurred in other areas, but we're just essentially now paying the software company to do it. Okay, so what are some management issues in technology for CPA firms? And I've got them in kind of two major areas, our strategic vision area and then our tactical operations. So big picture thinking for this, and then how do we actually execute? I will tell you that most accountants, I'm not going to say they aren't technical people. They're incredibly technical, but technology, software has grown so much over the last couple of years. Having a good grasp of what is going on and what's possible in the marketplace can be a full-time job. Myself, the other K2 authors like Randy and Tommy and Mac, I mean, we spend a year thinking about what we're going to talk about with you wonderful folks. And we try to give you the best of the best. But I can tell you, I read hundreds and hundreds of articles and watch hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of YouTube videos and talk with people just to understand what's going on in the market. As such, I'd recommend that you work with a firm and a provider that gives you good insight with respect to where the market's going and help you plan, you know, and for what is going to occur in your organization. But we need to kind of think through lots of different things now. How can we create that innovation spark in our company? What is the experience like for our end user? How effective will this be for our staff and for our clients? You know, and what that will look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now. Now, on the operational side of this, you know, there are a lot of issues around controlling projects, managing costs. A good friend of mine once told me that projects will take whatever space allotted to them, like gas will expand to whatever container it is in. Well, projects are like that too. And often, if you don't have a lot of technical expertise, especially when you're building something from scratch, it can be very difficult to gain that insight to keep cost control, timeline, and all those things necessary there. Now, we should also be thinking, what kind of clients do I want to have in my firm? Okay, I mean, there's a great book. It's called The Relentless CPA. It's a great, interesting book if you get a chance to read it. And it really kind of talks about the complexity and the success and the operations of a lot of firms. And it kind of helps you understand what kind of business you're in and what kind of operation you're hoping to run, you know. And I will tell you, finding the right client is probably the hardest thing. I would say finding the right client and finding the right staff are probably the two hardest things any business will deal with. As with anything in life, you know, we've got that 80-20 rule, you know, with 80% of our clients yielding 20% of the value and 20% of the value, sorry, 20% of 80% of the value coming from 20% of our clients and vice versa with our headaches. You know, I've got a handful of clients, you know, that have been fantastic over the years. And those are the clients I want to have. But unfortunately, most of us, myself included, also have a fair number, if not more, clients that tend to be a headache. Things that we should be kind of thinking about would be, you know, what are the clients that are causing us problems, that are causing headaches, that are unprofitable? I could tell you at a very, very deep level, we do a lot of productivity and utilization studying in our time in our inside of our organization. You know, where are the clients that are taking a lot of our time, but yet not having a big impact on revenue? And for me, I get rid of them. You know, I want to be able to focus on the clients I like that value our time and value our expertise. And I think the 2020s is the time to be able to do that. What would you want to help? What would help you and your clients? Okay. Well, I would tell you focusing on saving time for clients and not wasting it. Okay. We want to operate in the background and we want to provide bundles of service. One of the best lines I ever heard was value added building. I want to know where I'm adding value and bill appropriately. Just because I can do something in an hour doesn't mean I'm only going to have to bill for an hour. If it saved the client 10 hours, well, there's some value associated with it. Additionally, I want to find opportunities to bundle my services together. You know, I don't want my client having to go to two or three different places to get their professional services met. You know, if I can provide both the tax and bookkeeping and, compliance-based services, obviously not violating any sort of fiduciary obligation or reporting obligation, I should, you know. The best client you can find is the clients you already have and finding new opportunities to work with them. We should find ways of notifying clients of recommendations and inefficiencies and effectiveness. You know, reading through the financial statements, if you find a way to save a client money, you should probably let them know and maybe find a way to implement them in for that. clients don't really care about how we get it done. They want it done. They care about results. And we should be moving and elevating our position more to this role of a trusted advisor, that we are here to help shepherd and guide you through your business to make you help you make good and effective decisions. Now, I could tell you, I don't work as a CFO, but I do a lot of work as a CIO, a chief information officer. And often what I will tell people about that service is, I'm in the business of helping businesses make good technology decisions. You know, your expertise might be in owning restaurants or running hotels or manufacturing something. Rarely are you going to have enough expertise to understand the technical things that you're requesting or the efficiency and effectiveness that can gain by certain operations compared to others. I'm your advisor. I'm here to help you make these decisions. I'm here to help you make money and being more profitable and being more efficient with the work that you do. I could tell you it's the same thing as a CFO. You know, you're there to help the leadership of that business as a trusted advisor to be successful in the areas that they want to be successful in. So lots of opportunities that we can do to help improve our relationship with our clients. Now, I would say the days of providing just a tax return or a financial statement are over. I think there always will be, for example, you know, the need of, hey, I just need a compilation report so I can give this to the bank to get a loan or a mortgage. or I just need to process a return, you know, to be in compliance and get a refund. Yeah, I think those are there. I'm talking about the high value relationships. You know, the value that you can deliver to that client far exceeds the documents and the paper that those documents are produced with. And we can work to help make our clients more effective. Okay, we must work to make the numbers better. We must plan and make understandable recommendations and actionable items. One of my most frustrating things that I get, and I see this a lot in my business. So, you know, on the sales and marketing side, I find a lot of people have great ideas, but they lack execution. And for me, execution is everything. You know, I don't need more chiefs. You know, I need people who can actually get in and make these things work and make these actionable, you know, and actually do the work itself and work with me to make successful things happen inside of our company. You know, a lot of folks, for example, will tell you like, oh, well, your problem is you need to cut costs or you need to, you know, increase revenue. Well, that's not really helpful. You know, like how can I increase revenue? How can I increase cost? You know, from a technology perspective, it could be implementing new tech. It could be that could increase revenue, make you more efficient, not need as many people. But understanding the spectrum of business, having comprehensive knowledge with the different things that you can do, I think is really kind of the wave of the future. I really view the CPA being kind of the jack of all trades and being that person that can provide value at every step along the way. So making understandable recommendations and then ultimately implementing. I think people who implement are going to be the ones that are going to be successful. Somehow we got to do this at a competitive cost, you know, and I will tell you that that's not unreasonable. And in our company, you know, we're a team of about 12 people, you know, about half the company is in a support capacity. The other half of the company are software developers. We do the work, I'm going to say equivalent of about 20 people or so. We do this because we have such effective technology in our organization and we have modern processes. My business partner, Alex, and I don't think twice about cutting out a process that doesn't work or getting rid of an application if something more effective comes in. I'm not tied to anything that I have done up to the future. Nothing. I don't have an emotional investment on any client or any operation, any product. The second it doesn't make business sense anymore, don't even think about it. I cut it. And that's what you need to be. You need to be able to focus on the next generation going forward. We have to use less of our clients' time. We need fewer meetings, fewer phone calls. And I think a lot of that can come from selecting the right type of client. Needy clients are not fun. They're not fun for anybody, you know, and I ideally want to be in a position where I can provide the advice, help them implement this, but I do not want somebody that needs me for every single decision to make or is complete lack of ownership inside of their organization and their folks don't have accountability to be able to implement. You know, it has to be an effective time commitment for both of us. We have to be able to deliver all work products and recommendations electronically. This is the last century stuff. This is last decade stuff. Paper is the enemy inside of an organization. And if we eliminate paper, it opens up a whole new wealth of opportunities with respect to remote work and being able to service and organize with businesses anywhere in the world. I mentioned this in the last class. I recently started working with a firm that's split between Europe and South Africa, and I'm here in the United States. Well, we could do everything for them right here in Los Angeles, right here on the West Coast of the United States, without ever having to see them face to face. In fact, most of our client relationships are that way. We've never met the actual client face to face. We do everything electronically, and you know what? That reduces costs significantly. We also have to do it through secure methods of communication. You know, whether it be a secure client portal for dissemination and sharing of data and sharing of forms or through secured applications on the web, a way of being able to exchange and move information digitally without kind of any paper record being created can be incredibly helpful. Now, a lot of firms also need to be thinking about the clients that they have. In reality, you know, a lot of clients are aging, you know, and a lot of firms also are aging too. I mean, if we look at the average age of your CPA, as well as your average age of a client at a public accounting firm, it's aging, you know, and I don't have data to back this up, but I'm willing to bet it's 50 plus in a lot of circumstances. And the newer generations, let's talk, you know, I'm 30, funny enough, I'm 36 today. So I turned 36 this morning, obviously. My generation, you know, which I'm at the tail end of the Gen Y, tail beginning of millennial, unfortunately don't want to pay for services. It's very frustrating, even for me who has no problem paying for services. Many of my peers, they think they can do it on their own, you know, whether it be building their own software, doing their own taxes. In some instances, yes, they can. They're a more savvy consumer. You know, they have better options and, you know, they're the YouTube generation. You know, for myself, when I don't know something, what do? I flip over to YouTube, watch a 2-minute video, instantly being able to do whatever I need to do. And that's really effective. So if that's the case, CPA firm, we need to find new products, new services that we can attract these people with. Because if they're going to self-service for their own, I mean, that's going to limit our revenue opportunities for our firm. So we need to find new ways to engage with these people, as well as replacing our aging clients with newer clients. Now, the key to this is to build a pipeline. Okay. It should be an attractive thing where there's something that you offer them at a certain age and a certain category of their life, you know, and as they, you know, grow up, essentially they're put into the correct stage of the business and you find services that will work for them, you know, and it might be just general business advice to begin with, but eventually these people are going to be owners of businesses. They're going to be CEOs and executives of businesses. You know, you need to be thinking long term here in the context of that relationship and finding ways to take something from today and stretch it out for the next 20 or 30 years. And I can tell you a lot of that's going to come electronically. If I'm working with a company and there's not an ability to be able to buy or interact online, that's almost a non-starter for me. I'll just share with you something incredibly frustrating. I am an avid RVer. My family and I, we RV camp all throughout the year. And in fact, one of the nice things about being a software developer and working in professional services, if I have internet access, I can work anywhere. And I love that about my life. Well, because of that, we could take a long RV trip every single year. And we do that. Usually we take off around mid-July and we're gone through October, touring national parks and checking things out. And as long as we have internet, we're good to go, you know. Amazingly, though, 95% of RV parks cannot book online, and it is so absolutely frustrating. It's like one of the very, very few things where I can't interact online with somebody, and I just don't understand why it's not the case, and it really turns me off in a lot of ways to that particular market. I love it, don't get me wrong, and we frustratingly go through it, but I don't understand how this entire industry has come together to say, you know what? Booking online is not going to work for us when I can book a plane ticket anywhere in the world and a hotel room and a rental car to go with it. It's like they never got that memo, but it's going to turn off people who would otherwise be their customers. So financially, this stuff pencils out. If we look at, you know, an example here with savings or whether it be revenue, we can ultimately build a model for whatever we're trying to go for, whether it be, for example, finding new and younger clients and offering services to them, or, for example, working remotely. You know, as an example here, this is a case study on saving money across the different aspects of working from home, you know. And often, if we look at the major stuff like rent and time and, you know, basically all the headache that would come from being in a physical place, we can often save a significant amount of money for a organization. Okay, so what is your firm's strategic roadmap and what services and tools and offerings are you looking at? Well, there's a lot of different categories of this. I'm going to give you a couple of major ones here, you know, on the compliance side of this. You know, there's a lot of major providers, all the major companies like CCH and Thomson Reuters and Intuit, even other providers such as Drake and others. They've got a number of great solutions that are coming out here. These are examples of kind of best of breed applications. But, you know, there's a number of providers in the tax and audit space. We're going to talk about some of the more in the consulting and wealth management a little bit later. And on the advisory side of this, you know, there's a lot of options to consider as well. You know, there's stuff from Intuit, Accountants World, Xero, Sage, Intact is certainly. And on the advisory side of this, we're starting to see some applications pop up as well. Now, question you should be asking yourself, are the big tools and the big choices the same as the right tools? you know? And I could tell you that there's kind of like two major schools of thought, best of breed versus integration. And what that kind of means is, you know, do I want a tool that is the best for a particular suit, or is it more important for that particular tool to integrate and share data effectively with other organizations, other organizational resources? You know, as an example of this, the major software companies like your CCH, Wolters Kluwer, Thomson Reuters, you know, they've got the whole platform, the whole kit and caboodle around practice management, tax management, engagement management, document management, workstream, and more. Thomson Reuters has their Onvio platform as well. Accountants World is another really great option for this as well. Versus best of breed, you know, for example, you know, ProConnect or Caseware or Docket or Lisco, those aren't a whole platform. They're kind of the best individual application for their use. Often you got to make this determination whether or not that's a good fit for your organization, whether you want to go kind of that initial one-off application, or it's more important to, you know, kind of be in a suite of products and tools. And there's some even more here as well, from CCHI firm, as well as, Thomson Reuters. Now, personally, my personal opinion for this, I would tell you, I like platforms. I would tell you that it is better to have integration across an entire company-wide set of tools and services than to have a whole bunch of best-of-breed single application, because ultimately the workflow, the headache and effort that comes into managing each of those applications on their own, man, can that be really difficult. You know, and in the accounting space, I would say you really kind of got three main tools to consider. You know, the Intuit suite of products, which range from like ProSeries and Lacert, to the Thomson range of products, which are going to be your UltraTax and Accounting CS and Practice CS, to your CCH products, which are going to be your Access products as well. I would tell you that most organizations would be best suited by picking a platform, a single use platform, you know, whether it be, you know, Intuit, Thomson, or CCH, but for the basis of your accounting practice, I think that is overall the best. Personally, I think Thomson's are the best. I say Thomson and CCH. I'm not a huge fan of Intuit, truthfully. It's not that their stuff is bad. Philosophically, I don't know if I 100% agree with Intuit's approach. It's kind of hard to buy the software I need to run my business when they're also my biggest competitor, you know? And if I look at a lot of the applications that Intuit is building in the professional accounting space, I mean, they're just not as professionally oriented as I would see with Thomson or CCH. Now, in the future, we can pull all these different applications and maybe integrate them together using digital plumbing tools like Zapier, Power Automate, or some sort of API integration. This is what I do a lot. You know, company has A, B, and C product. You know, it might be an inventory solution, an operational solution, and an accounting solution. Well, our company will focus on integrating those different tools to make it effective for their use. You know, and it could be for a wide variety of reasons in terms of maybe that's the best application for them, and maybe it is a licensing thing or whatever. But, you know, in the near future, and even today in a lot of respects, we can easily integrate more things together. Now, what's the architecture of your roadmap and what kind of applications are you considering? Okay. Well, the current architecture for a lot of this are app based and then using some sort of remote desktop based. Okay. So app based would be, again, like choosing, for example, like QuickBooks on QuickBooks desktop, and then hosting it in a Microsoft Azure data center. You know, you kind of combine these two things together, and what you end up with is some sort of centralized, what we would call VDI or virtual desktop interface. And that's okay. I mean, but that's not cloud. I mean, that's just basically taking something that existed for a bit and, you know, kind of making it a little bit more modern. And it's not a bad approach, but I mean, it's also not modern either. You know, I've worked with a number of providers, software companies over the years. There's one that comes to mind that's enraging. Their marketing is so frustrating. Their application's been around since the 90s. Okay. It's a very, very niche product for what it does. Very, very niche. Their application's been around forever. You know, it was always something you just bought and installed inside of your network. Well, they're cloud-based. And by cloud, I mean, they're just running it in a server that's not in your office, but it's the same poor experience that it's always been, but now they're rebranding it as being cloud, and it is not at all. You know, when we really kind of think about cloud tech, what we really are thinking about are some of the major ways that we can leverage technology. It's more than just putting an application on a server and running it in AWS. There's a lot more that goes into it. It's a thoughtful reconsideration about how and where and when that particular application could run and making it as effective as we possibly can. And ideally, you know, kind of becoming more browser-based, running it just inside of Chrome or Edge, and then, or running it inside of a mobile app. So I personally find that to be the effective approach. And for more organizations choosing that, I think that's going to be an overall better way of doing it. We need to reconsider at this point, you know, the different ways that we want to operate and finding newer technology to do that. So support choices vary. You know, I would tell you that as you're starting to think through this, think through some of your operational stuff, think through some of your hardware stuff, some of your strategic stuff. What does it look to have a kind of a single company is outsourcing to do all of your IT? You know, and on the answer side of this, I mean, there's a couple of different ways that you can handle it. You can handle it at the software provider level. You know, for example, my family, we have an accounting practice and we do everything through Thomson Reuters. And I've looked at all the different products, but they're all roughly the same, whether you're working with CCH, Intuit, or Thomson Reuters. Well, if I have a problem, I can call them and it's in their virtual office and they deal with it. Well, you know, unfortunately, if they have a major outage on March 20th, which they always seem to do, well, me and everybody else is calling, you know, and I'm typically going to be at the back of the line. You know, we could do in-house, which is, you know, a way of handling it. It can be great. It's expensive, you know, and you might not need those people 365 either. You might have an IT committee, you know, in terms of designating people to steer and help figure this out for you and make the technology decisions for you. And you have a lot of different options. I mean, you can also consider hosting companies like Centrum or Ace Cloud Hosting or some sort of managed service provider such as Randy Johnston's NMGI. A lot of our recommendations are going to vary based off the size of the organization. You know, I've got small, medium, and large, and then there's some stuff that kind of spreads across all firms, regardless of size. Now, I'll tell you, if you're small, you know, like let's say less than 10 folks, use a hosting provider. Either use the software provider like CCH or Intuit themselves, or pick a company like Ace Cloud Hosting, or pick a company like Right Networks, you know, something like that. You can pick best of breed providers for what you want. And you should really be focusing on that client experience. I mean, the scalability collaboration stuff isn't really going to make or break your organization. I mean, you're not at that revenue position and staff position where you're really going to get the major efficiencies that would come from size. Now, if you're a medium-sized organization, you want more control over this. I would tell you to use a managed service provider and then ultimately use a cloud company like Amazon or Azure. You know, I love both those companies for a lot of different reasons. They're really fantastic. But I will tell you, AWS, Amazon Web Services, is not a consumer tool. It's an incredible tool if you know what you're doing, but man, will it really enrage you if you don't know what you're doing. There's no customer support, and it's not designed to have customer support either. Just like, you know, Pro Systems or Access is designed to be worked with a practitioner. These high-end cloud providing companies, they're also designed to work with the practitioner as well. So a managed service provider is going to be effective here because they're going to take care of a lot of that on your behalf. And I would also tell you to kind of focus on the advisory services, starting to add benefit to your organizations above and beyond the compliance frameworks of what you're doing. Now, large organization, use public cloud providers as well. I can tell you again, using AWS or Azure, great. You're going to get all the efficiency and effectiveness where you can now pick best of breed application. You can also focus on a lot of vertical stuff because you know what? You can pay to have them integrated and implemented in your organization effectively. Across all organization, you should protect the practice with a variety of advisory services, you know, and helping your organizations grow. You can grow a lot faster, you know, offering multiple lines versus just a single line of business. You should plan to replace everything in your organization in the next 5 years. As I mentioned, I think we are in a big purchasing cycle at the moment, and I don't think it's unreasonable to think that a lot of organizations are going to be replacing hardware, software, platforms in the next couple of years. And I would tell you, pick stuff that's going to make your team and your clients happy. Alrighty, let's go ahead and go into our next section here, which are going to be trends in the profession. Okay. Now, what we want to be looking at here are just some of the big level trends that I'm seeing in accounting, in firm and public accounting spaces, stuff that you might want to keep an eye on over the next couple of months and throughout the rest of 2022. Okay. So, I would tell you more and more accounting practices, thankfully, are running towards technology and are finding other opportunities to improve their practice. One of the cool things is that with tech, we can really kind of reset the clock for a lot of these organizations, and we can find new ways to be able to engage and new ways to be able to find value. So some of the big trends that I'm seeing, for example, are some of the stuff around the .cpa domain. I'll show you that here in a minute. We'll talk about what that is. We're talking about experiences, for example, to help improve our client experience overall. You know, what has it been? Where are we going? We're talking about also, for example, improving and adding additional services like around advisory, finding vertical markets to work in, niches. I have a colleague of mine who solely works in cannabis and is making a killing. And he is basically the CFO for cannabis-based services. And that's an industry that essentially he is owned, and it's only going to continue to grow. We're going to also talk through some different migration strategies, virtual meetings, pre-accounting, training, and more. But these are some of the major trends that I'm seeing in the market that I want to make you aware of. Okay, so the first one I want to talk about is the introduction of the AICPA's top-level domain. Okay, what do I mean by this? What's a TLD, top-level domain? So we're all familiar with .com, .org, .net. Well, there are hundreds of different top-level domains now, and a top-level domain is the extension that when you press and to go to a website in Chrome or Firefox, it's that last bit. It's the com, it's the net, it's whatever. Well, the AICPA, in conjunction with the Internet Corporation of Names and Numbers Assignment, or ICANN, has created a new domain, which is .cpa, okay? And it's 100% intended to be focused on the needs of professional accountants, both individuals as well as firms. And you have to be a CPA in order to be able to get one of these. So just like in the 20th century, we use these things called telephones. I've been told I can make and receive phone calls with this thing, although I just seem to post on Instagram and text message my family with it. But I guess you can use it for a phone call. Okay. Domains are the way that we conduct business, and it is the directory to find people in today's market. Okay. So you can get this CPA domain, and it's really easy to do. So instead of getting firmname.com, you can get firmname.cpa. So a good colleague and friend who's also a longtime Texas Society speaker, Brian Tankersley, recently, for example, changed his domain. Previously, it was bftcpa.com, so briantankersleycpa.com. Well, now he got a new domain, and it's tankersley.cpa. So you can email him if you'd like and say hello, brian@tankersley.cpa. Again, limited just to CPA credentialed holders, any country. So you can be a chartered accountant in the UK. Totally cool. And it's going to cost you about $225 for most domains, although they do charge a little bit more if it is a shorter, what they consider a premium level domain. Let's go ahead and take a look at this and see if you're interested. Alrighty, so we can go over here to the AICPA's website, just cpa.com/.cpa. And we can go over here and click a CPA domain. And we can go ahead and check. So it's going to tell you very clearly, you must be a licensed firm. They check this at the state level. So if you're not licensed, you cannot get this. We can just go ahead and put in our name here. So let's just go ahead and check yas.cpa, and sure enough, it is available. So if anybody wants to snap that up, by all means, please feel free to help yourself. Now, other domains, for example, would be more expensive. As an example here, K2ECPA is a premium one, so that is $690. But usually, if you're just buying a name, it'll be $250. Now, personally, I think this is nice. It's a nice to have. I mean, $225, in my opinion, is way too much. I personally don't have this. I probably won't buy my own name. You can get a .com, .org, .io, .co. I mean, there's lots of different TLDs that you can choose to get at a far more economical price. But, you know, if you like it, $250, you can get the name that you want. If you're looking to buy other domains, my favorite domain registrar is Amazon Web Services, for lots of different reasons. But you're going to buy your own domain and you're not using AWS, you just want to go buy a domain for your firm, buy it from Google Domains. Google's just the easiest with this, and you can check in. You know, you could just find essentially, let's say Texas CPA. Let's see. I bet that's taken. But it'll check a lot of the different top-level domains for you. So it'll check .org, .io, .co, whatever, you know, and you can find a whole bunch of ones. And it'll tell you if it's available or not available, okay? The only registrar I don't like, and I cannot tell you how much I don't like them for a lot of different reasons, is GoDaddy. Please don't buy from GoDaddy. They are not their tools are not really that good. And there are so many other better providers that offer a lot better services than them. If you ever try to leave GoDaddy, you'll find it's very, very frustrating to use. And a lot of people just use them because that's the ads they've seen. Just realize there's a lot better providers at a lot more effective prices, starting with Google, you know, for that matter. So if you like that TLD, go ahead and register it for yourself, and you can advertise to your clients that you are, in fact, a certified public accountant. I hope you enjoyed today's presentation. Let's go ahead and wrap up. Before we go, we do have to go through our three review questions for today's class. So let's go ahead and start it off. Our first review question: what does the acronym CAS stand for? Is it Client Advisory Services? No, it is not. Is it Client Audit Services? No, it is not. What is it? It's Client Accounting Services. So we've been using that term in recent years to kind of summarize all the professional accounting types of services, whether they be bookkeeping, compilation, or more, that we could provide for our client. All right, let's go ahead and take a look at our second review question. Which is not considered a major provider of suite-style tax and accounting software? So what this question is asking is, out of the providers listed here, what is not considered part of the big providers? You know, these are the providers that are providing a wide range of professional-grade tax and accounting and firm management solutions. Okay. Is it Intuit? No, it's not. Intuit is definitely in the big three, as I would think of them, with their Lacerte and Pro Series products. And I'm not even counting, including things like QuickBooks or TurboTax. You know, they are more consumer grade products, but Intuit still does and will probably continue for many years to continue to offer professional products. Is it Thomson Reuters? It's not them. They definitely have their Pro Series as well with UltraTax and, UltraTax CS, Accounting CS, Practice CS, and more. Is it CCH? No, it is definitely not them. They've got the Access products and the other professional tools that they offer accounting firms. So what is not a major provider here? Well, that major provider is not Microsoft. Although they have tons of accounting products, whether they be the GP products, the NAF products, the AX products, and more, those are more industry-focused solutions, not really designed to meet the needs of professional tax and accounting providers. All right, time for our third review question. What is the average yearly cost for registering a .cpa domain from the AICPA? So the .cpa domain, that brand new top-level domain available to advertise your firm. Unfortunately, they're not free. You do have to pay for these things. And so what is that average cost? And it does vary. They do have some premium domains for ones that have lesser characters compared to more characters in the actual name. Do you pay $100? No, you do not. Do you pay $500? Nope. Is it $50? No, it is not. The correct answer here is $250. All right. Well, that does bring us to the end of our class. I hope you enjoyed the presentation presented for you. Today, we went and took a look at high-level stuff, understanding what the accounting profession is facing, upcoming trends that could affect it, and how we can respond and hopefully grow and prosper from these upcoming changes as well. We also took a look at some of the major technology, some of the platforms and services that are coming out, as well as updates that go along with those services as well. This is just part one of a two-parter. We'll bring the second part to you in the future, in the next couple of weeks. In the second part, we're going to go ahead and discuss advisory services and why firms need to consider this for their practices. Advisory is the ability to offer business consulting services above and beyond what we've done traditionally with tax and accounting, and it's a great way to be able to grow your business. And we've also got a number of additional major technology platforms and suites that you might want to consider for your CPA practice. Now, I do want to remind you that today's podcast is eligible for CPE credit. It is super fast and efficient. After watching and listening to today's podcast, head on over to cpetoday.com and use course code CFT1. Again, that is cpetoday.com. Use course code CFT1. Take a quick 5-question quiz, and then you will earn a credit that will be assistable, that will assist you with keeping on top of your continuing education. It always seems to sneak up on you, and staying on top of those credits is a great way to maintaining that professional license. If you like today's podcast, and I hope you did, we'd love to hear from you. You can find us on social media, on most channels at CPE Today. You can find us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and others. We'd love for you to follow us and reach out and let us know what you think of our content. As always, you can listen to our podcast anytime on your time. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and others. We'd love for you to subscribe so that you can get updates and get our podcasts as they come out. We're putting out new content twice a week, Tuesdays and Fridays at 11 a.m. Pacific. You're always welcome to watch live, but again, subscribe and you can get it on your time. It's a pleasure being with you here today. Thank you so much for watching and listening, and I look forward to seeing you back in the office the next time around. Take care.